Welcome to the My Walk, My Way podcast.
They wanted to take away my darkness,
but that will take away my light.
They wanted to take away my darkness,
but I've learned to make it mine. I learned to love it over time.
I've learned to make my shadow shine.
I hope you're enjoying the My Walk, My Way podcast. If you are, make sure that you subscribe so you always know when a new episode is coming out, and leave us a review. It helps other people to find out about the podcast. If you'd like to keep the conversation going, please join us on our Facebook page, the My Walk, My Way community, where we talk more about the authors, about their endotypes, and about their stories. That's also where you can ask questions about your endotype. If you don't know yet what your endotype is, go to the My Walk, My Way website. Both links are in the show notes below. And take the simple 5-question assessment to find out what your endotype is, which author you're most like, and download the free resource guide that helps you understand more about how you work. It helps you start to move through fear so that you can do your walk your way. And if you're part of a book club, we invite you to make My Walk, My Way part of the books you consider this year. And we have included a book club guide on our website. Today on the podcast, I am talking with Wendy Herman, and she wrote the chapter in the book, The Path Not Taken. She is an emotional pituitary contributor, and I'm going to tell you right up front, in this episode of the podcast, we are going to talk about more adult subjects for women, right? We're going to talk about the choice not to have children. And we're also going to talk about the experience of losing pregnancies. So if that's something that you choose not to listen to, this episode might not be for you. Wendy, though, I love talking to this lady. It was so much fun. She has spent most of her career in training and higher level education and has recently become the training coordinator, career coach, instructor, and facilitator. She loves science and she loves political science, policy, literature, student counseling, educational leadership. She is open-minded and a lifelong learner, and she lives with her farmer husband, John, chocolate lab, Penny, and enjoys podcasts, even being on them. Dave Matthews Band, camping, outdoor walks, puzzles, and bread making. Enjoy this episode of the podcast. So, Wendy, your chapter of the book is called The Path Not Taken, which is really interesting because the whole vision for this book, right, was I want to walk in my own shoes. I want to take my own path. The subtitle is Women Who Changed Their Lives One Step at a Time. And the book cover at one point, what we were thinking about having like this path that women were on. So to have the path not taken, can you tell us a little bit more? Tell us what that path is for you that you chose not to take.
That was such a wonderful piece of this journey, because I remember when we were trying to determine chapter titles, and I remember you had suggested a few, April had suggested a few, and I went with none of them. And I went with this one of The Path Not Taken. And the reasoning behind it was, as I was going through a lot of my journey and grief and understanding a lot of that, one thing that came up in therapy for me was my therapist was very candid talking about how as we go down different roads of life, we have to accept that we can't go down two roads at the same time. And we have to really give ourselves space to grieve the path that we didn't take, because even if it was the right decision, we can still be sad about it. And so that was where that chapter title came from for me, was the decision to not be a mother at this point in my life was a path I chose not to take. And I had to be really honest about what that meant for me. And that's where the chapter title came from.
That's awesome. So for listeners who might be here and maybe they haven't read your chapter yet, or they read your chapter back a while ago, you kind of have two different stories of that decision to not be a mom. Mm-hmm. Can you lay that out a little bit for us? Like, what did that look like when you chose not to take that path?
Sure. And I can tell you that my decisions on paths changed multiple times, right? That is our prerogative in life. So my initial path to take was to not be a mother. So I would not be taking the motherhood path. And at the beginning of my marriage, my husband and I had a conversation where he asked me to reconsider taking that path. And as we had that conversation and talked through that, we made that choice together that yes, we would go down the parenthood path together. Mm-hmm. And so I changed my map. I changed where I was going. And as we worked through that journey and experienced some loss and experienced unexpected twists and turns on that path, we revisited the decision again. And we went back to the decision to veer off the path again. And now we are on a different path of not being parents. And as we go through the ins and outs of it, we still revisit that conversation, you know, more than we thought we would. But a lot of it did come down to going through what we went through, walking through the steps that it took to get from here to there, choosing the path that we did ended up being what was right for us. And ultimately, that's what mattered. I'm so glad you're editing, because that felt very rambly.
No, it made total sense.
Good. Okay.
No, you're doing great. You're doing great. So initially, you and your husband got together and you knew you didn't want kids. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want kids, right?
Correct. We were very candid about that at the beginning of our relationship, because we both agreed that that was one of those things you kind of needed to be on the same page about, you know, before we committed to marriage with each other. And so we married with the intention of not being parents.
Yeah.
So that was how we went into it. So just as we all learn and grow and change with maturity and experience, that's what he went through. And he came to me again in the spirit of honesty, saying, "Oh, I am reconsidering that decision that we made." And that was scary. That was very scary, because it felt like it was a final decision, you know, and when you think of a decision's been made, you move forward in that with that premise. And I didn't think we would be revisiting that decision at all. So right. So when he came back asking us to revisit it together, it was a challenge.
It was one of the parts in the conversations that we had in the writing of the book, and even made it into your chapter. It was really something that I appreciated, was that inside perspective that you gave us on your relationship and on your willingness to revisit the conversation, but to even evaluate, like, maybe I need to let him go so he can have this for himself, if this is something that he actually wants. And not in a, like, I didn't ever get like bitterness, fine, go, you know, kind of thing, like a bitterness from it, but more just a practicality and a love.
And I think that's one of the biggest lessons I learned, is that, you know, when you truly, truly do have that love, it is unconditional. And that means supporting the people that we love in however way that they can be their best. And I think, and for me, that was part of the conversation that we had together. I had said, if this is truly something that you want and feel would help complete your life's journey, then I want you to have that. And that became a piece of the conversation. I asked mm-hmm. him directly, if this is what you truly want, is it enough? Do you want it to the point that you would leave? If I said no, do we need to leave each other and let each other take separate roads to get what we wanted in our lives? And that became another just layer of the conversation, mm-hmm. because he then took that and had to walk away and sit with it and come to those conclusions himself as well. When he came back to me and he said to me, regardless of your decision, I want to stay in our marriage. That alleviated some pressure in a way, because he too was, my love is unconditional. I would like us to be together. And that helped a lot of, in a way, it almost supported my decision to go ahead and try, because the commitment was reaffirmed. And I felt that that was a good foundation to assess parenthood.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And that makes sense for you, especially with your endotype. So mm-hmm. with your endotype being the contributor endotype, one of the wonderings or the ponderings is, am I doing the right thing to be loved? Am I doing enough to be loved? Yes. Because there's this, for the contributor, there's this connection between doing oftentimes and love. So I can hear how that would show up for you, or see how that would show up for you in this conversation, and also take that pressure off a little bit when you knew this wasn't his love was not conditional on your doing.
Correct. And that is huge. When I was going through the endotype process and really understanding that about myself, that's what spoke to me the most, was the connection of value to action, and to be able to look back and know that there's a lot of growth that needs to be involved in recognizing that, and knowing that we are not our actions. You know, we are us, and we are always worthy of the love anyway, but we just have that whole mentality around it. So that it takes extra effort.
Yep. And that's that position where love exists for you and your endotype. It, mm-hmm. it helps you. I mean, no lie. The question that part of you asks is this my path? It's so funny mm-hmm. that this is all part of this whole conversation, right? But is this my path? And oftentimes that part comes, you know, that part I say connects to the parent. We've talked in previous episodes of the different parts that mm-hmm. connect, and even the fact that the parent part is oftentimes then that voice that we would call imposter syndrome.
And I'm very familiar with that voice. Yes.
Are you? So can you speak to how that imposter syndrome voice of that is connected to the parent also then connects to connection, compassion, empathy, and those kind of feelings for you?
My imposter syndrome likes to tell me that I'm not good enough, right? Mm-hmm. That I'm not bringing enough to the table, or that as much as I might think I have a seat at this table, I don't really belong there. And so to put that in the framework of being in the mindset of not being a mother, I felt I didn't have to worry about having a seat at the mother table. I didn't have to worry about being a good enough mom. I could remove that from my list of many worries that we carry in our hearts and our minds. Mm-hmm. So when the idea of being a mother came back onto the table, all of a sudden it brought its best friend imposter syndrome with it, because not only was I having to think through this whole other potential identity, I then was carrying the baggage of the imposter syndrome that comes along with that new identity. And that was heavy, and that was very layered. For me, when we lost pregnancies, that was imposter syndrome telling me, I told you so. Mm-hmm. You tried and you just weren't good enough. Mm-hmm. And that brought, again, layers with grief and battling through all of that. But it also brought me to a new level of compassion for others, because I have lived this imposter syndrome layered experience. And it has really helped me be that ear for someone else as they are starting to go through a similar experience. It has increased my ability to sit with empathy with another and provide the support that I know is really needed, especially when someone is similar to me, because I understand the voices in our head that are telling us that we're not good enough. And when we experience something that on the surface demonstrates that we might not have been up to par or able to perform in a certain way, on the surface, it looks like a failure. Mm-hmm. And on the surface, it looks like we aren't good enough. Mm-hmm. But we have to know how to look below the surface to really understand that it is the efforts, it is the heart that needs the support. And that was one thing that was a big catalyst for me in really understanding my desire to want to help others more, to be supportive to others. So when I did the endotype quiz and I got my contributor result, I was not surprised.
Right. And it's so interesting to me in hearing you talk, you know, you were talking a lot about good enough and you used that terminology for a long time. That's one of the things that I've noticed as I've talked with different people because enoughness and value is actually part of your genius. It's what you give freely to other people. It's what you edify in other people. But very often when we have what I call a love craving, right? And that's what you have at that parent level, is that love craving. We turn love in, which I define as, right, the ability to be with each other and see each other at a heart level, right? Mm-hmm. It's compassion, it's empathy, it's, and when we crave that, that's what we crave. I want to be seen I want to be felt at this heart level. I want to be connected to another human at this heart level. And yet we then, if we don't get that from someone because they're not the right person for us to get that from, or from a circumstance, we then turn that into a different message, which is super interesting. We turn it into, I must not be good enough. Or I must not belong here, which are cravings for some people. But so often this one, because it's so much easier to say, I must not be good enough than to say, maybe I'm not lovable. Like that sucks.
Oh, yeah, that's, both of those messages are pretty bad.
Right. But there's something about that heart level where we just can't quite say that whole feeling. Mm-hmm. We kind of turn it into a different message.
Yes.
So speaking of worth and enoughness and feeling valued, you've talked about it a little bit, that you're now able to stay with and be compassionate and hold value for others, but it's part of your genius as the contributor. How do you use that in your life?
It's so interesting to me to be able to like name this and label this, because I find a lot of fulfillment and joy in assisting others in their success. Mm-hmm. Watching people learn, grow, have those light bulb moments, sit with them as they're going through the struggle of it, and basically be their cheerleader and sit with others through their experiences. That is where I find a lot of my personal joy. And that has really led me to visit what that means. I've done this for so long. And as we've done this work together, Laura, I'm like, oh, to be able to kind of name it and talk about it, it makes a lot of sense for me. I learned to find a way to see that unconditional support for myself by learning how to provide it to others. And I knew that was a way I could move forward, because for a long time I was hurting. I was in a lot of grief. There was a lot of pain, and the recovery took a while for me. And one of the ways out was to start putting out to others what I was really wanting for myself. And by doing that over and over again, I learned the skills to give myself the exact same support, the exact same cheering, you know, and mm-hmm. to carry that through for myself. And it was because of the ability to mm-hmm. to put myself out there, to see the success in others, to celebrate the success in others, and not take their success as a taking away from mine, but as a way that right. we were doing this together. And that really helped heal me as well.
Yes. Yes. Isn't it funny? Like I talk to other people about how in the human experience, and it's what this book is talked about, right? It's about comparison. We innately have this idea that, like, everybody's kind of on this scale. We maybe put ourselves at a 4, a 5, but there are people who we are better than. And there are people that are better than us. And we put ourselves on this scale, but not better at typing. Like, there's a lot of people better at typing or spelling. For goodness knows, there's people better at spelling than I am. But we, as humans, right, we are innately on this level playing field. We are on one plane. Yes. We are all worthy of love. And me owning my worthiness doesn't take away that person's worthiness. Me owning my significance or my own personal power doesn't take away anything. We need to stop thinking of it as an up and down scale and level the playing field, knowing that we're just designed differently, with different strengths and weaknesses, different things that we put out, which are based on our endotype, based on our genetics, and just own this space that we're in, knowing that it's not removing anything from anyone else.
Oh, exactly. I think that comparison lives in the world of a limited supply. You know, it's just this assumption that there's only X amount of love, self-love in this world. So Laura, if you are having more self-love than I am, that means there's less for me. Well, that's just a scarcity mindset in a lot of things. And as we switch over to that mindset of abundance, we then understand that this is an unlimited supply. There's unlimited supply of love and confidence for all of us. And as we support that in each other, we will support it in ourselves. And then it continues to grow. It's difficult, though. That is a difficult piece to work through, because for a very long time, I lived in that world of comparison as well, which means there must be a very limited supply. And so to work past that, that's where the growth can come in. But it comes for me from helping others see that in themselves.
Yeah. And we're born into a comparison world, whether,
of course,
whether our parents mean to or not, we are compared from, right? My son's in the 98th percentile. We're graded on our work. You get 100%, you get a 90%. We're born into this comparison world. And so we just think that that's normal, and we have to untrain our brain. Because maybe I did only get 90% on my math test, and that's a quantifiable thing. But when it comes to worthiness, that is not quantifiable. Like, we are innately 100% worthy. Everybody gets 100%.
Always. And I think as we grow older, and I think especially as women, as we grow older, that's the way we understood how to measure. Right. So it started out that way early in our lives with that quantifiable 90%, 100% type of situation. And as we grew older and started to really understand norms and unfortunate things about being women in our society, as those come to the forefront for us, all we knew to do was to measure that quantifiably. How else do you measure worthiness if you don't put it on a scale? We just didn't have the concept of how to understand that outside of that. And as we grew in that and then learned more. And for some of us, I will admit this, I went down that path of trying to figure out how to quantify things like worth and love. And boy, there's no end to that path. That is not the way to go. We have to bring it back and find different ways to understand that about ourselves, because it's not a quantifiable type of measurement at all.
Yeah. It's just inherent, you know, like we all have inherent blessed upon us.
Yes.
One of the things that I heard you talk about already was belonging. And also when you were sharing how you like to help people process and build and do and see that whole thing happen, that's part of belonging or building, you know, a business, an idea, a project or whatever. And belonging connects to you at your hero piece. So it's part of what you do really well is helping people feel like they belong, feel like they're part of the community, feel like they're part of the group or family, get into those earth things, their business, their home, their, you know, all those things. But it's also something that likely because it's part of your hero space that you've had to go through your own journey and struggle and then kind of came home to feel your own belonging. I call it like training that hero piece of you.
Yes.
So how have you trained that hero piece?
Do you remember when we were young and there would be that person sitting at the lunch table with nobody else? They were sitting there all alone. I remember being young and going to sit next to the person who did not have somebody else at that table. So this has been a journey from the beginning for me. So that's always kind of been innately in me to do that sort of bringing into the fold sort of action, I guess, depending on, you know, where we are and what we're doing. I think it's because I too always want to feel like I belong. I want to be with the cool kids. You know, I want to be sitting at the good table. And I think that as we learn and grow and we understand that there might not be space for us everywhere, but we can make space where we are and we can bring people into our space, which will allow that area to grow and bloom and become just as good as any other space that we may have once wished we belonged in. A few years ago, almost 10 years ago, I had participated in a long-term, a monthly development group. And at the end, like one of the very last sessions, one of the questions that went out to the group was, if you could give a compliment to somebody in this group, what would it be? And everybody kind of goes around and like has their things to say. And one woman, it was her turn and she said, Wendy, I just wanted to let you know that on the very first day here, I was very shy and you came up and talked to me and you made me feel like I belonged. And I was like, I still do that, you know, even as an adult, this is still happening. And that was so reaffirming for me. And it was like, I didn't do it with the intention of making myself look good. I didn't expect to be acknowledged for it later on, but it was such a joy to see it noticed and appreciated, because this woman then said that it changed how she interacted with the group from the beginning. And it from there, I thought perhaps that inclusion added value to her experience. And that's what I find to be so important. Sometimes all we need is to feel a little bit included so that we can give of ourselves even more to whatever experience we're in. And that's what I think is so important.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because there, belonging is on your possibility side. You're creating possibilities. You're opening up space for people. You're putting it out there into the world and letting it shine. Mm-hmm. But for other people, belonging is on that craving side for them. So very likely the lady that you were talking about who was feeling a little shy, she was feeling a little lack of belonging at that moment. And it can even be very extroverted people who still feel this lack of belonging kind of thing. It's not just the introverted little wallflower, but I'm sure it changed her experience, because if you, by you just naturally putting out what your strengths are, what your endotype strengths just naturally are, you found someone who you plugged right together. She had a craving, you poured it out into the world, and it clicked right together so that she could have a different experience. That's how I match coaches and clients when I'm looking at to see who's an ideal client for this coach. We look at what they just naturally put out into the world. And who's then craving that? Because there's going to be a match there that's going to be transformative for the other person.
Yes, for both yes. parties.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, that makes sense. So, so reeling back to your choice to go down a different path, the path of not motherhood, did people always approve of that choice?
No, and one thing I find interesting is we live in a society that thinks it's okay to make that a public opinion all the time.
That was going to be my next question.
But it's natural, right? Like it's always been kind of considered a safe topic of conversation. You know, what's your name? Where do you live? Where do you work? Do you have a family? Like these are boilerplate questions that we use all the time. And it never bothered me until I went through this experience. But I think there was always an assumption growing up. I think as women, there's just an assumption that we'll be mothers. We learn about it when we're young. We understand it as we're young. And it's a path. Most women do become mothers. So it's not odd that we would kind of assume that about others. So I can't necessarily say that I was concerned about approval in a way, but there was definitely judgment that came with it that may or may not have, I don't know, judgment might imply approval in a lot of different ways, but people have opinions and they have a tendency to want to share them.
So what is your advice then? I hear that it's a topic of conversation. I hear that. I mean, because mm-hmm. we kind of want to know, you know, like, is it just you and your husband? Do you have kids also? Oh, interesting kind of thing. But mm-hmm. here's what I also notice is that the closer the relationship is, so if it's my sister, if it's my cousin, if it's my daughter, if it's my daughter-in-law, I may have a stronger opinion of what I think you should do. And so from that perspective, when there is a childless couple that we know, or we have one in our family, what should we say? What should we not say from your perspective?
That's a great question. And I hope that people hear this response. If the topic comes up of, hey, are you going to have kids? And the answer is no, the issue is over. Like that does not mean please ask at every family gathering or every time we're talking. The answer is no. If it changes, I'll let you know. But it's really like accepting the truth when that person says it. Like when I say I am not a mother, I have no plan or intention of bearing a child, the issue is closed for me. And sometimes that's what makes it a little bit more challenging is that often those who are closest to us, but they want that for us. I want you to have that experience. I want you to know that love and feeling. And that's great. I appreciate the support. But the answer is the answer. Hear it and respect it. Respect what people are telling you because it probably isn't an easy conversation to have.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that it shows for a lot of people, it shows kind of a personal, they feel like they have a vested interest somehow in this decision, right? So if it's just like Bob at work says, you got kids? Nope. All right. Bob moves on.
Bob doesn't care.
Bob doesn't care. A lot of times if we find ourselves in that position, we have to look at what do we think we're going to get out of this? You know, like what's our vested interest and understand that it's really not our choice. It's kind of like, right, hey, Wendy, do you have a truck?
No, I don't.
Why? Trucks are awesome. I have a truck. So many people have a truck. They're great for hauling. You're going to love a truck. You should have a truck. Like that's nonsense. Yes. We would not think of trying to convince someone that they need to have a truck. And yet we do that with like human life.
Oh my gosh. Right. And it has taken a lot of work and therapy and being really candid and honest with myself to learn and understand that I want you to buy a truck to validate my decision to have a truck. That mm-hmm. it's not about me. You know, it's about that person who's asking me and the validation that they are seeking. And we feel threatened when other people do things that are different than us. Because then are we doing something wrong or are they doing something wrong? And we have to take a step back and know in the bigger picture that it's not about the issue that we're talking about. You know, it's always something deeper And that goes so far beyond that initial question of, do you have a truck or do you have a child or are you going to have a child? That's about something else. And that, and accepting that has really helped me let it go. And also accept that for some people, me not being a mother had removed our possibility to bond. Mm-hmm. And understand that and accept that evolution of a relationship and go through some of that as well. Because sometimes that's, people are seeking that connection in order to bond, in order to have something to discuss or share a shared experience. And without it, sometimes we are lost. We don't, sure. What else can we talk about? Well, maybe trucks, you know, who knows? There are millions of other things that we can connect upon. It doesn't have to be about children.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the other thing from the perspective of somebody who has kids, but I have friends who have made the choice similar to you not to have them after having lost a pregnancy. Knowing that, having more of a front row picture to seeing that. And I'm sure if somebody has read your chapter, they're going to get that pain and that experience that you went through, because you talk very openly about it. That maybe isn't something that they want to discuss, right? It's not a thing they want. So, right, I get that it's this topic of conversation, but if somebody says, no, it is none of your business to ask further questions.
Absolutely. And I can tell you that the topic has come up in life as it does. And I have been in circumstances where the topic has come up and then I felt compelled to tell my story, or like I felt kind of forced to say what had happened to me, to like relive that trauma or to talk about it. And I didn't like that either. So I did go through some work to really kind of get my script together so that when it does come up, I'm able to protect myself by saying, no, kids aren't for us. And I leave it at that, because otherwise I feel often compelled. I'm a nurturer. I want to tell you my story. I want us to connect on it.
Yeah, we want to connect at that heart level.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I had to stop doing that because it was reliving the experience for me for a long time, especially as I was still really in the grief portion of that experience.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah. So it's really more about finding the ways to really own it for myself, because I don't want to talk about it. And I can tell you, when I have told or shared to somebody who wasn't expecting that response, yeah, so the conversation ended. Like they felt horrible, or they didn't know how to hear that. They did not realize that that was what they were asking. And a part of me hopes that they take away from that understanding the importance of being sensitive when we ask about things like this.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think you've shared some valuable insight from both perspectives, both, you know, the person doing the asking, but also, you know, people who have a similar story to you, whether it is because they just personally don't want them, which is how you started, or because of loss or infertility or whatever it is. Yeah, we don't need to continue to re-traumatize ourselves. We get to choose when there's a story in our life. And in this book, you know, and even in the podcasts that we've recorded, there has been a lot of people who have very bravely and vulnerably shared some of their darkest moments and vulnerable stories. And I thank you for sharing those with us and for allowing us to kind of have a deeper insight. But you get to choose when to share it.
Exactly. And the timing of this particular book coming out worked out very great for me in the journey of this, because a lot of time has passed that I felt ready to tell the story. And that's another part of it too, is it was not traumatizing for me to tell the story at this point in the process. It was cathartic. It was healing. And that's a piece of the understanding that we have to remember as we're having these conversations with others. People are at different phases in processing traumas that they've gone through or understanding the impact it's having on their lives. So we cannot assume that having this conversation is great for everyone, or, you know, it's so good. I'm so glad we're doing it. It's really just about understanding. And again, meeting people where they're at and making that connection and providing the support, because the more we are providing support and creating a space to tell stories like this, I think the more people will ultimately feel supported, the more people might be able to come forward and hopefully reach a point of healing. And I think that's really what sat with me in the importance of sharing the story.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely done that. We're very blessed that you were able to share this and have normalize mm-hmm. this whole experience from multiple perspectives, and give us that inside look at your life. So I appreciate you, and I appreciate you being on the podcast today.
Thanks, Laura.
Gosh, wasn't that a fun episode? It was so fun, I actually got distracted. I usually ask my authors a couple of additional questions, so I wanted to share with you some of that information. Wendy, these days, is still working in her full time. But you know what? That writing bug that she had before we started working on this book project has really, really started to take growth. And so she is moving forward in her life and going to be doing a lot more writing and coaching and loving, she said. If you feel like you would like to connect with Wendy, to learn more about her, you can go to our website, mywalkmyway.com, and check out the authors section. But if you want to connect with her directly, she recommends that you email her at writingwithwendy, that's with a Y, at gmail.com. And we're going to put that email address in our show notes below, too. Thank you very much for listening, friends. Thank you for joining us today on this episode of My Walk, My Way. To not miss an episode, please go to wherever you get your podcasts and hit that subscribe button. While you're there, it really helps us out a lot if you leave a review. To pick up a copy of the My Walk My Way book, you can get that wherever books are sold and order that. And on our mywalkmyway.com website, you can find special gifts that help you understand your endotype just a little bit better. I can't go today before I give special thanks to the band Gin, Chocolate, and Bottle Rockets for allowing us to use this beautiful music from their song Shine. Check them out. The rest of their music is great too. Love to make my shine.